So, of course, I have to say thank you to my colleagues. I have a team of people at the University of Maryland, child psychiatrists, computer mavens, and graduate students who make it all happen. I guess Hillary Clinton said it first when she said it takes a village, and it takes a village to do pharmacoepidemiology. Now I'm going to click the right side here. The down arrow. Well, say what? I can't hear you. Okay, now I'm moving over here. Alrighty. So quickly, today it's a little bit of a challenge to go from all the technical information that is required to define the health services research variables that we're going to look at, and then carry on with implications from that. So bear with me. I'm going to try to talk about the prevalence of use, defined as the percent of children who are enrolled in an insurance population and receive one or more dispensings for a particular drug or drug class, and to show the trend in that over time. And we have 10-year, basically I have 10-year information to share in a Mid-Atlantic State Medicaid program. But I'm also going to refer to a few of the folks who are out there doing similar studies around the country. And the implications for this, my background is that I was part, and in fact, Don Madison is here in the room, I think, and graciously funded our contract, worked with NCHS, because the Best Pharmaceuticals for Children Act began to mandate that we would pay much more attention to children than we have in the past. And so that was a great hope. And is still a great hope that can yet be fulfilled because this work goes rather slowly in spite of legislative mandates and in the absence of money. I will also mention the term off-label use. So for those of you who are not familiar with that term, it means that an indication for use has not been developed or established. And there's a lot of that because physicians have a sacred tradition in American medicine, which FDA guards very carefully and honors that and reminds us every day that they can do as they please. At the same time, we continue to talk about an evidence base. And so there's some disconnect there for me between honoring both of those notions. And I'll talk about drug safety gaps. And finally, I always have to remind us of the importance of considering the needs of vulnerable populations. And I point out foster care and the disabled, as well as the poor and the near poor, who are all in the Medicaid population and are getting substantially more medication relative to their privately insured peers. So, briefly, seven reasons why psychopharmacology is different depending on whether we're talking about children or adults. Well, the old saw that children are not little adults. You know, little livers don't deliver what big livers can do in the way of drug metabolism. Some of my colleagues, Dr. Dan Safer, has analyzed secondary data, that published information, that will show strong differences in effectiveness of an antidepressant in children, particularly prepubertal children, compared to adolescents and adults. Anticonvulsant mood stabilizers have not been demonstrated to be effective in children, although Karen Wagner did a great deal of work in the area trying to establish that. Chris Carell has also shown effect size differences between children and adults for that same group of drugs. These are anti-epileptic drugs. They were developed to control seizure. And we've moved from controlling seizure to basically reducing acting out behavior with the same meds, all off-label. Safety differences, Safer again showed that antipsychotic use, these are secondary antipsychotic, atypicals, they're called, second generation, that's the word I'm reaching for here, second generation, out since about 1993, which is a very short time interval in the world of clinical pharmacology. So we have now a lot of attention. I think Dr. Abramson was reminding me how much litigation is going on out there around the use in children and the enormous safety problems that we are uncovering in community care. We didn't uncover them in the trial work. It happens as we roll out and get into more complicated populations and under non-ideal conditions. And the BPCA was going to be encouraged, the pediatric rule encouraged trials in kids, more attention to the pediatric population, but there really has been a very modest effect, and I think partly driven by the absence of strong funding support and certainly not enough in the public sector. Another point that I would make about kids versus adults is that the last point here is the really weak evidence base. So as we were kidding earlier this morning, sometimes we talk about evidence schmevidence, you know. Where is this evidence base, this illusory thing called the evidence base? With children, it's extremely weak for psychotropics. The biological model is one of our problems. We really have never really fully established the credibility of that concept. The DSM is a problem because it has trained several generations of psychiatrists now to count symptoms and not so much attention to functioning, which is the very thing that parents and grandparents are interested in when they have to bring a child in for serious behavioral problems. And then finally, concomitant use, which is the new game of drug one from class one. Drug two now comes from class two. Drug three comes from class three. Concomitant use is all essentially N of one. You know, there's really no evidence base there at all. So in summary then, we should look further at kids. Okay, so antipsychotic safety concerns. Several important papers were published in 2009 that came from community samples of kids that were really carefully studied. And so these are kids with in the mental health sector, and they are and they've been shown to have substantial exposure on the average of 3 years in the case of Kelly Kalarsh's paper in kids around 7 to 17 years of age. They showed any number of abnormal cardiometabolic measures, you know, like lipoproteins, triglycerides. These are elevated, as well as insulin resistance. Chris Correll really made the New York Times and everybody in child psychiatry stand up and salute with a 10 to 20 pound increase in weight in an 11-week period. So you can imagine that if you were the parent focused with that, you would find that pretty hard to deal with. And these were new users, so this was very rapid onset of weight change. And then finally, we've had a study, major study for autism called the RUP, and this examined kids 4 to 13 years of age. And at 16 weeks, almost half the kids had gained more than 15% of their baseline weight, which on average was about 9 pounds. So the clinical community is now very well aware of this weight problem. And that's one of the reasons, because these lab abnormalities over time, starting at a very young age, suggest high cardiovascular risk. So I'm just going to quickly run you through a few slides of our data that examine Medicaid population in the 10-year period 97 to 2006, and show you that with a computer technology now you can extract these are reimbursement claims, and some people feel, the purists feel, they're not clean enough, they're not good enough as like trial data, but they do tell you a lot of descriptive information that at least generates hypotheses that we should think about. So here's 160,000, 300,000 kids in each of these data sets. They're 2 to 17 years of age. They have been continuously enrolled for 10 or more of the 12 months in each study year. And the basic grouping variable we're going to use, those water pots are really terrific. we must put that in on the evaluation. So 97 and 06, we're going to compare, and our outcome measure is going to be the percent prevalence of use. First, I'll show you unadjusted data, and then I'll show you the fancy adjusted data. Now, a little backup here, okay, and forgive me if you're going to walk away and say, oh, that slide was really horrible. It is horrible because I have to introduce a new term. It's not just, we're not just going to look at antipsychotics right now. We're going to back up and look at any psychotropic drug use in kids. Now, any psychotropic, you know, is one of seven different groups. The leading ones are stimulants, of course, number one in the kids, then antidepressants, and now antipsychotics is moving up into the lead. So if I tell you that over the past 20 years in this single state Medicaid population, then I can point to your showing that data increase in use has gone from 1.8% to 11.2% over 20 years. That's how many more children we have. This is Medicaid, of course, so it's going to be higher than in the commercially insured children. And I'll show you some numbers down here at the bottom. If you look at the very bottom numbers, you can see the comparison between looking at antipsychotic. Now, that's that one group of drugs, not all of the drugs. But look down, 2.7 versus 0.05, that's a fivefold difference, and 4.2 versus 0.7, a sixfold difference. So what you're seeing is that Medicaid-insured children are receiving five to six times more likely than commercially insured. We should step back and think about that for a little bit, because for many years... Yeah, okay, so, well, here we go. This down here, we should think about that because we have social class and race ethnicity differences that are very pronounced here. And so one of the issues that eventually we're going to, if we openly dialogue about this, is are we medicating environmental and social needs, right? I think the word you sociologists like is medicalization, and I think I'm ready to endorse it at this point, because it doesn't seem like the numbers stabilize. They keep growing.
The new term is pharmaceuticalization, which is a mouthful, but there are leading articles now on pharmaceuticalization.
That's very interesting. Okay. So I'm just going to move on because we have no time. But the antipsychotic use that I want to point out to you is the growth. Okay, so number four. I'm going to show you the data that generated this fourfold increase in 2006 compared to 1997. And you'll notice that ADHD drugs went up just about the same, although there's a nice paper out there that the feds have put out which suggests that the growth in ADHD drugs has stabilized, but we can't find it here in Medicaid data stabilizing. And then finally, you'll see the drop in antidepressants, which is all blamed on that bad FDA, what they went and put all that warning about suicidal behavior. And so I've been pilloried by my colleagues in child psychiatry over the last, we studied the problem, published it in Medical Care last year, our interpretation of the data is you didn't have appropriateness of use from these numbers in the first place. So how can you cry about a drop in the numbers? See, there's this just so much lacking in terms of evidence that a drop in use of antidepressants in children is a bad thing because of the hype around the suicide problem. Okay, we can move on. So here's some graphs for you to try to ponder. Basically, linear increase in age, that's not a surprise. We know that the older you get, the more likely you are to get a psychotropic drug. This is an antipsychotic. In terms of gender, of course, it's the bad boy syndrome. So boys are more likely. In terms of race ethnicity, those of you who think that we're just medicating race have to be careful, because outpatient use of medications for psychotropic purposes, our data from dispensings would show you that white kids stay in treatment better than non-white kids. Okay, so what are we doing for African American and Hispanic kids if they come in and have only one or two prescriptions when we're treating supposedly chronic conditions? So this is a lot of wasted money and wasted effort that we need to find out. Why aren't they coming back? And then in Medicaid, I think a really important variable is their eligibility. How did you get here? How did you come to Medicaid? And so some of you come by foster care, some of you come because you're SCHIP or near poor, and some of you come because you're disabled, and you're so disabled that your family gets payments, so that's supplemental security. TAMF is the poverty. So everybody is getting more in 2006 than they did 10 years before. And in terms of region, this state has three, we divide it up into three regions. The North Metropolitan region is the poorest poor in the state, are all practically in there. And then the Southern Metropolitan is another locus of poor and non-white poor. And then the other region are largely white. And you can see there's a growth there. Okay, so, yeah, I'm going to have to move fast. This is the only thing you need on this slide, the first one. that there's a fourfold increase by the logistic regression, which adjusted for six of those covariates that I just showed you. So why are we concerned? Well, others are showing the same 10-year growth in children and adolescents, and most of it is for off-label use. A lot involves combinations, and clinical trial data are not enough. So what's wrong with trials? Well, you know the limitations. They're very short-term studies. They have relatively small number of subjects, and there are many, many exclusions. So most of the children that you just saw in those data sets would not be entered into a trial. So clinical trials are a necessary first step, but they're not sufficient for us to understand long-term safety for pediatrics. And Helen Egger is a developmental specialist at Duke, and she wrote an editorial. So for the first time, I was able this past year to read an editorial by a leading researcher in child psychiatry that really spoke out about the use of antipsychotics in very young children. And here's what she said. At times, it seems that medications are being used to target disorganized or disruptive behaviors that have their roots in relationships and environments that should themselves be the primary targets of interventions. So I'm now, I think it's a marvelous quote, because, and she called her editorial, a perilous disconnect between the evidence base and clinical practice. So what we are getting now is the emergence of, this is the first voice coming out of child psychiatry that I can identify that is very clearly and unequivocally saying we really can't continue to do this. And then the second last point I'll make is that last week we just presented 2 to 4 year old data in 2 to 4 year olds, not 2 to 4 year old data, in 2006 Medicaid population, and 75%, and we had that same leap, okay? We had I think it's twofold increase in use in the 2 to 4 year olds. But what really blew me away is 75% of the kids who had a diagnosis showed it for a behavioral or disruptive disorder. So antipsychotic use for disruptive and behavioral disorders, including ADHD, while 1% of the use was roughly for those approved indications like schizophrenia, very legitimate use of antipsychotics. We have risperidone double-blind evaluation data to support it and a labeled indication for autism. And now we have the big controversy is pediatric bipolar disorder, which you know the DSM is going to take that on very soon. The other thing quickly to point out is that diabetic ketoacidosis is a very rare event now in pediatrics, but is not so rare in children who've been exposed to antipsychotics. So these are serious issues that require monitoring, if not, you know, real decisions about whether to continue to use them. I'm going to have to stop, but I think you have the general idea that we have a guest arriving.
Good. Thank you, Julie. Very important material. We have with us Senator Sanders, a great American patriot And we are very fortunate to be able to hear from Senator Sanders. He's going to talk about a proposal, a bill that he has authored, which is designed to disconnect the incentive from drug research and drug marketing that Don and Julie have both talked about, so that drug research can do what it is designed to do, which is to develop new pharmaceutical products that have value to the public by treating disease better than drugs that have come before it. And by disconnecting that research arm from the marketing arm, what we'll get is an honest presentation of research data and then an honest marketing of the drug as a generic drug. So, Senator Sanders, thank you very much for coming, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you.